This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, thank you again for coming back to listening to another episode of The Magic Word. It's always a lot of fun for me to meet each of you whenever I go out on the road or I'm at a magic convention, and several people throughout the convention come up and tell me how much they are enjoying the podcast. And I hope that if you happen to see me at a convention someplace, that you go out of your way at least, or at least stop me and say hello. I would like to have an opportunity to meet you and perhaps even to say hello on air if we have an opportunity to have my microphone with me. And I always like to hear what you guys have to say and what it is that you want to hear. If I'm doing okay, am I going in the direction that you like? Is there a format that you think I should change to? Or whether there's perhaps someone that you suggest that I should go and talk to, or maybe a topic that you might want to suggest, I will take those all into consideration, certainly. I just like to hear from you. I think I'm doing okay. I like you seem to like the job that I'm doing. And I hear that from time to time in the emails I receive and texts, and also conversations that I have in passing with some people at the magic conventions. And speaking of travels, I was recently, of course, as you had heard, going up to the IBM convention in Grand Rapids. And along the way that I had stopped off in different places. And a couple of weeks ago, I posted a podcast that included a discussion with Clark May, who owns the Rabbit in Hat Magic Shop in Locust Grove, Oklahoma. And I thought it would be interesting then also, now in juxtaposition to that here a couple weeks hence, is to also post this podcast, which is with another magic dealer of a brick-and-mortar magic shop, Mr. Andy Dallas. So we're going to be talking with him here shortly. As I said, there are a lot of conventions going on. We're kind of in the midst of the active convention season. And as this is being recorded, we just had the SAM convention. And of course, I had already been to the IBM convention, and FISM has passed. And again, along with that conversation I had with Clark May, I had another conversation with Stuart McDonald, who was one of the competitors at FISM in Busan, South Korea. And speaking of FISM, if you have not registered for that, it's an exciting time, because in 2021, we'll be having the convention in Quebec, Canada. And I'm sure that Sean Farquhar is someone who is to be commended, along with his team and a lot of people who had worked with him in order to try to get this in North America, the first time ever, I believe. And I know there's been a lot of interest, a lot of people who have registered. And if you have not already registered, the sooner you register, the cheaper it's going to be. It seems like just within a few short days, they already had 500 registrants. And I was one of them. I wanted to get in to be registered for this one as well, since I missed the one in South Korea. Anyhow, so it is going up just a little at a time, and you can also save yourself about $75 or so if you will spring for the membership for FISM. I think it costs about $15, so obviously it's a good deal. If you're a member of the IBM or SAM or the Magic Circle, or, well, there are a number of organizations recognized by FISM who are member organizations, and if you are a dues-paying, up-to-date member of one of those organizations, you can get a FISM card and then get a discount on your registration. So check that out then as well, and you can find that information on their website. And the website is FISMQEBEC2021.com. That's FISMQUEBEC2021.com. And the cheapest prices have already expired. The early bird prices will have expired by the time that this is posted, but you will still be able to save if you register now rather than a few months from now. Anyhow, check it out. It's exciting that it's going to be here in North America, and up in Quebec, it's going to be a lot of fun. Speaking of other conventions, obviously coming up soon is going to be the Magic Live convention in Las Vegas, and there are 1,800 people who are already registered. Obviously, it's been sold out for quite some time, as it does every year. And I'm going to be posting some daily updates, as I normally do from the floor of these magic conventions. And so you'll hopefully enjoy listening to what's happening there if you don't happen to be one of the people who is attending. And even if you are, you might want to listen to kind of hear some of the conversations with people who you may have missed or didn't see, because there'll be so many people there. I know I'll be missing a lot of people as well. I'll be traveling in big circles, and as I'm going around, there'll be somebody on the other side of the circle. When I'm trying to talk with one person, I'll miss somebody else. It's simple economics, guns or butter, one or the other. So that's going to be coming up. And then after that, of course, is going to be the Texas Association of Magicians here in Houston, the taom.org. /2018. If you're interested, we're going to be having some great lineup of entertainment there with Doc Hilford and John Archer and Michael Weber and Paul Draper and Kyle and Misty Knight and several others. The list goes on. It's going to be a great convention. And if you haven't registered, you know, check that out. If you are not going to be here, you can listen to my daily updates. Again, that's usually one of the larger conventions. It used to be, when I was president of the TAOM back in 2000, we had over 1,000 registrants. Most conventions have fallen off in registration overall. Doesn't matter. But as to what you were, it's a matter of who you are now, I guess, and the which is a topic perhaps for another podcast and at a future date as to why conventions may have been falling off in attendance, and that's across the board regardless, maybe except for Magic Live. And why would that be? I might have to look into this. It's kind of an interesting thing. Now I brought it up to myself. And then after that, of course, is going to be Magic Cuba. And that's going to be magiccuba.org. That's going to be November the 7th through the 11th in Havana, Cuba, the first time we've had a magic convention down there. So as I said, I'm going to be at that, and that'll be a lot of fun. If you haven't registered for that, please check that out. Tremendous talent that's going to be there. And I'm sure that John Stetson and John Rose can still extend to you some sort of a favorable registration rate for the convention as well. So, as I said, we're kind of in the midst of this active convention season, plus also a lot of lecturers who are coming through then right now. I coordinate a lot of lecture tours for our magicians, and currently I'm working with Michael Kaminskas as well as Gregory Wilson towards the end of this year, and I have several cities where they're going to be passing through. And if you're in the U.S. and are interested in hosting conventions, be sure to contact me. That's lectures. That's plural, lectures at scottwells.com with your club and where you're located, and I'll let you know who's going to be coming up and put you on the list. So, moving on for this week's episode, I want to introduce my guest, who is a past national president of the Society of American Magicians. He owns his own brick-and-mortar magic shop in Champaign, Illinois, was a former escape artist, collects carnival con games, a very interesting gentleman. He also does one of the best zombie routines I've ever seen. Not just routines, but he has some of the best handling for the zombie of anybody that I've seen. And I mean those who have taken the Chavez course and everything. This guy is a master of the zombie. And he also has some very elegant linking ring routines or moves and some ideas and handling that he has privately shared with me. He's a deep thinker in the way that magic works and how it should look and how that he presents his magic. He's very serious, very artistic. So please welcome my guest, Mr. Andy Dallas, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. And today I have a guest who is a past national president of the Society of American Magicians, and also in his early years was a well-known escape artist. And I'm not talking about Harry Houdini, so I'm not speaking to someone from the grave. I'm speaking to someone who is alive and well, and one of the best guys, one of the friendliest guys you're ever going to meet. And he has also been the proprietor of the of his own magic shop and costume shop here in Champaign, Illinois, where we are today, and also collects a lot of carnival con games, and a lot of magicians, I think every magician collects something, and we all have a lot of us maybe the same things, maybe posters, maybe playing cards, it could be coins or whatever, it might be a 10-year-old magic tricks in this case that he happens to collect these carnival con games. And so if you get an opportunity to ever come to Champaign to his magic shop, you got to come by to get a guided tour of this. I think he's actually had them out, a few of the things out to conventions from time to time to show some of these very cool things. But he is a man with a varied past for being as young as he is. So please welcome my friend and yours, Mr. Andy Dallas. Hey, Andy.
Hey, how are you, Scott?
I'm fantastic.
It's so good to see you.
Always good to see you. You know, I don't get up here often enough, but when I come through Champaign, Illinois, I always like to have an opportunity to stop by your wonderful shop. You've been here for 46 years, and this is the second location.
43 years.
43 years.
Yeah.
And so
we started in 6 by 8 feet.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and now I'm in 15,000 feet, and I have a not just the magic shop. You know, it's got all the other stuff with it.
Right.
And we've got a 5,000 square foot warehouse, and I own a third of a block.
Wow, in the middle of Champaign,
you're
pretty much downtown Champaign.
Yeah.
So this is not like in a strip mall or anything.
No,
but it's really kind of
This is it.
You know. On that subject, I did a podcast a while back on the brick and mortar magic shops, mm-hmm. and I think the last time I was here, you and I were talking about this because that you have the magic shop as a small part of that larger costume shop that you've
right.
got.
Yes.
And obviously, I'm guessing this is the largest costume shop in all of Illinois, bigger than any place in Chicago.
Probably is. Oh, I think maybe Fantasy Headquarters might be bigger than us because I think they got a block.
Okay.
But I don't know about footage-wise, but they're a big company in Chicago.
Do you make your own? Do you have some people who actually
seamstresses? When we started doing this,
yeah.
We were in the upper 35%. We only had 200 costumes. So you can see how small this industry was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to make them then. But as things got, the business picked up around the country.
Right.
They became wholesalers and guys making it were cheaper. They could do it cheaper than I could make it.
Right.
And we ended up with 2,000 costumes.
2,000?
Yeah.
It's what you currently have in stock?
We had, we've kind of cut back on this now
mm-hmm.
Because you can, at this point, you can buy costumes for that are really nice
right.
For the cost of rental. And so we kind of backed off of this because they really are, you know, if you're going to rent something for $60 or $70,
right.
you can buy a costume for that looks really good for that one trip you're going to do.
That was, in fact, that very thing. We had Frankel's Magic and Costume
mm-hmm.
Shop in Houston, and Frankel's closed also. I think they'd been in business close to 50 years also. And they just closed a few months back. And I remember one time that I had a show in which that they wanted me to dress up in a Renaissance Festival
mm-hmm.
kind of. And we have a RenFest in Houston, and so they have people who sew these costumes. They're absolutely gorgeous, but they cost hundreds of dollars to rent because it costs so much. They would, of course, clean them and every time when you put them back. And so I ended up buying something for like $100 thinking same thing, I can wear this over and over instead of spending a couple hundred to rent, you know, for
You know, when you are in what's called a plot
mm-hmm.
Costume business, that's renting costumes for the purpose of a play.
Okay.
They take very good care of them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. But when you're doing what I'm doing, okay, and I'm here at the University of Illinois.
Right.
And they are pretty destructive on them. So what the situation is with most of these costume shops is that when you buy a costume, it used to be you rent it 3 times and then you could make money on it.
Okay.
All right. Now it's 5 times. And by the time you've rented it 3 or 5 times, it's pretty shot.
Well, that's when you start to make money, but you're really not making
money. Okay. That's right.
I understand.
So it's gotten very difficult for costume shops all across the country because of the expense and because of how much it costs to maintain them and to store them and to re-put them up again. Labor-intense business.
I think also that you're competing with those spirit Halloween pop-up shops, you know. And I was talking again with Lonnie Frankel sometime back and also Steve Lancaster with Top Hat Magic in Tulsa, who was saying
mm-hmm.
that the problem is a lot of these times that these places are really not selling quality costumes the way that that your place does. And more often than not, they cost more at those pop-up shops than they do actually at your place.
Well, certainly, but you know, it is a pie, and you know they get their share, and it does take away from the brick and mortar stores that were there before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I And internet is a big situation as well.
Sure, sure.
And now they can come in with their phone and just look at the packaging that it's in, take a picture of it, and they'll have a list of all the people that sell it and what they sell.
They can scan the UPC code.
Yeah, even that. Yeah. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It's really gotten to be a different type of market. And that's okay. I mean, I really, in magic especially,
mm-hmm.
I really like having a magic shop.
Right.
All right. But there's a guy in Montana who's 500 miles away from a shop.
Right.
And, you know, where he's going to get his magic stuff is online.
Of course.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So it all blends together.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use different strategies when you have a magic shop. Most of these magic shops that have come and gone, when the ones that haven't lasted a long time.
You mean the brick and mortar?
The brick and mortar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Get what's the most popular thing. A lot of it's not. A lot of what you see, when I would buy samples from my wholesalers,
mm-hmm.
and I would like have a standing order for put an extra $100 worth of samples in the order.
Right.
I would get them. I might find one or two things that was worth having, and mm-hmm. the rest of it was things that nobody's going to come in and ask for, and
right.
it's going to be too hard for me to demo,
right.
and all this kind of thing. So it would take a lot of money to just get a couple of items that would be, you know, killer for you and make money on.
Right, right.
And so what you have to do is dance around that and figure out what you can do that you're not competing with the major companies that are online, which are good companies. I'm not knocking them. And you are working on things that you can sell. And that's
sure.
what's happened. In my hearing of what's going on in the rumbling, most magic shops that are brick and mortar now are only buying what they can sell.
And, you know, talking to Emery Williams, you know, of Williams Magic, you know, out of mm-hmm. Tucson, he had a different philosophy. That's why he had that big truck and he went on the road and everything with it. But he was saying about how that the margin really comes in with the smaller, cheaper plastic things, you know,
it
that
does.
Might be the cup and ball kind of a thing, or cup and ball and vase type of thing or whatever, that you get people interested in magic to begin with, but there's a higher margin, as opposed to a professional coming in saying, hey, there's a smaller margin on that you buy from Murphy's and you sell, you know, to retail magicians, as opposed to the other things that come from overseas someplace, you know, and so you have that larger market. But it was interesting too that he said, I feel like that marketing, sorry, that the magic market is like a python, you know, that they, you know, they eat something and, you know, then it kind of goes on down, you know, it's like you feed the python a pig and you can see this kind of a bubble, it kind of, you know, in its neck and then going to its stomach. And you got to have something else new. You got to find, you know, another thing to try to continue to feed that python before it moves on. Another one wants to be fed, you know. And so you got to, it's interesting, I guess, about how that trying to find new markets. But then also, I'm sure people come in here and they'll show you a video of something that they've seen on YouTube and saying, hey, you know, do you have one of these, you know, and how much would it be?
Sure.
So, yeah.
And a lot of times, again, you know, you're going to order something online and it's shot over their shoulder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's like the old magic catalogs from years ago.
Yeah.
It's got everything in it, but, you know, it doesn't have threads. It doesn't have this, doesn't
right,
have that.
Right.
Whatever it is, it's really simple.
Yeah.
And stupid.
Yeah.
And so you have to deal with that.
Well, there are new things coming out all the time. And also, you know, I think it'd be hard to keep up with an online shop that might drop ship or something, for an example, as opposed to you trying to keep up with the newest thing, because I know Murphy's is sending out, and Penguin too. It seems like every week it's like, hey, look at our newest such and such, you know. And if you carried all those things, my gosh, this would take up 10,000 square feet, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the wholesalers and the online retailers are interesting. And what has happened, having been in business for 43 years, okay, I've been a magic dealer for that long. When I first got into this business, you may not have thought of this, okay,
mm-hmm.
but I talked to Jay Marshall out of Chicago
mm-hmm.
about it, and he said, if you want to be a successful business at that time,
yeah.
all right,
yeah.
a successful magic business, you need a builder.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Like Mac Magic or something?
Yeah.
You mean, okay.
Well, but no, it wasn't Mac. You had to have your own builder.
Okay. Okay.
Okay?
In-house.
Mm-hmm. In-house, or, mm-hmm. you know, or establish it somehow, all
mm-hmm.
right? So you have unique things.
Correct.
And then at that point, we would trade with each other.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Like Abbott's, for an example.
That's exactly
okay.
right. Okay. So you could trade with the different stores.
Huh.
If you know you had something, can you wholesale this or can you trade with me on this? But you had your own builder.
Oh.
Now, as time progressed, we got to see Mac Magic and these other places begin to flourish more.
Yeah.
And Abbott's, mm-hmm. they begin to wholesale. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we didn't need the builder. And so now...
You can buy direct from those
you can get,
manufacturers, basically.
But the problem with that is that everybody then can get it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So at that point, you have to either come up with ways of getting around that. So what I do, if I were going into... again, there are different kinds of magic shops.
Yeah.
Okay? So if I'm in a mall and I'm in a tourist area,
mm-hmm.
I would have what's called a pitch shop. And you would pitch the
hovering card.
Hovering card. Yeah, that kind of thing. Okay? Mm-hmm. And the thousands of $20,000+ that they're spending mm-hmm. at Houdini's to be
right.
there a month.
Right, right.
That's an amazing amount of money you have to make before you make any money.
That's
at
right.
all.
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting way of making a living. It's a mm-hmm. different kind of magic shop.
Mm-hmm.
Online is a different kind of magic shop.
Yeah.
Having a magic shop, you know, that's like me, you have to be very careful what you get into now. You can't just go out and get the samples anymore. I can't afford it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So we have to start looking at what people come in and ask for. And so I could have it. I've had an item here. I've had items that are downstairs in my warehouse that I've had for 15 years that nobody's ever come in
and asked for it. Yeah.
And nor will they. Okay. Yeah. So there's a lot of things on the line that they can show. It's kind of like a catalog.
Uh-huh.
And so they're an online show. They were like Abbott's back in those days, sending you a catalog that's 3 inches thick.
Right.
And it's wonderful. I mean, it was great to have
that.
It was a dream book.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now we have to be very careful as to what we buy to stay in business. And started looking for the things that we can demo.
Tim Felix, up in Midwest Magic in Chicago, also was telling me once, you know, that his way of handling things is on-time accounting, basically, you know, that whatever he has one of everything. So when that's gone, he'll order another one. Just-in-time accounting, that's what I'm trying to say. So he has just-in-time. So as soon as he would sell one, he'll order another one. So if you want two, it's like, I've only got one, but I can get you another one, you know, then later. So as opposed to having... you know, six books or three of this.
Well,
or...
what you may not know is that there are certain dealers, I'm not going to name wholesalers and so forth, but there's certain wholesalers that say you have to buy a quantity.
Correct.
Of this item.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and it would be a certain amount of money that they make on all their sales.
Sure.
So you'd have to get a dozen of this or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Or two.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that the item's $40, my cost. Okay. And I got to get two of them. That's an $80 cost right there.
Right. All right. Right.
It doesn't take long to get $1,000.
That's right.
In buying this stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and every other order that you make is $25 average.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Four items is $100.
Right.
So it really is, you have to be very careful what you get. So as in a shop like mine, I'm dealing with people that are new and coming in, or I'm dealing with people that have been in, and after a while, you sold them everything that they're going to get. And
yeah.
So you can figure that in a year or two, I will make a gross of $600 to $1,000 on a magician.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get to be more picky.
Yes, sure.
All right. And that's
what
way,
I'm saying. They kind of move on.
That's right. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
All
right.
Right. And then they'll start even getting things custom built and so forth, which mm-hmm. is okay with me. I mean,
right.
But I'm here to I have to keep coming up with new, you know, the crop. You have to keep mm-hmm. coming up with more of the crop. And so that's the kind of business that I do here. It's
do you have an online presence as well?
We do, but it's not full service type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but we do have a billboard.
Yeah.
Sort of. That's kind of the way to put it. And
we
don't do a big business, although my son is running the company now. And they're beginning to tend toward that goal.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because, see, that was kind of, again, going back to mention Frankel's in Houston, where that Lonnie Frankel was going to turn this over to his son Jason, and
mm-hmm.
they ended up not because the property, what happened was he would have, except that where they bought, that the property was worth however many millions, of like $3 million or something. And it's like, well, I might as well take the money and cash out early and I'm done. But the point was, he was going to be giving that then to his son. He was going to be handling the business, as I understand it. But one of the things he was saying is one of the first places he wanted to get rid of was the Magic Corner, because that was where the lowest profit margin was. And that was took up more space that he could actually be making money with the costumes and everything. Is your son kind of, you know, is he going to carry on with what you've got here? Or see, what are his plans?
I would bet that it's similar, but here's the difference, okay? The costume rental shop,
mm-hmm.
after 10 years of being in this business,
yeah.
okay, and having a magic shop. You have three or four people working in the rental shop.
Yeah.
And then you have one person working in the magic shop.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually both doing the same amount of money.
Hmm. Well, okay.
Okay. So it was the lowest income that I was making.
Okay.
Back in those days, though, it's changed.
Yeah.
Costumes became very big, quick.
Boom. You mean like for home parties or
yeah,
things?
Yeah, no, for Halloween.
I mean, like at Halloween, people having parties
yeah,
and things.
Yeah.
And so, okay.
It actually started with the razor blade and the apple or needle in the apple thing.
Oh, when people that weren't going out, they
and
started.
And then that changed from just boom, from children to adult overnight.
Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some contacts. There were only six people at the trade show I went to that sold Halloween.
Yeah.
That was it. Now it's a huge show.
Oh, sure. I've been to the one in New Orleans.
That so big, you know.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that spirit thing.
And mm-hmm. And so it's very, very much changed.
Yes.
So as this grew, and just to a few years ago, it was 60%. The business was 60% of selling costumes.
Yeah.
Okay. And 40% of accessories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's reversed over the last 4 or 5 years.
Huh.
So it's a different market.
Because of online sales, you think?
Whatever yeah. it is, it's just changed.
Yeah.
So people want the accessories and they'll make their own costumes or whatever. I don't know. But that's the way it works. So you never know which way this is going to go.
But you think your son will kind of keep his finger on the pulse to kind of see which way.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
not going to get rid of one thing.
And,
yeah.
and we don't know what's going to happen here. And
sure.
I'm in a really prime location
you
as
are.
Well.
Mm.
And that may we're seeing things build up all around us.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's going to be a possibility of property taxes and other things go
well,
up.
They're good. It could be like Frankel's in which
and
the property
may
be saying, hey,
this.
I'll take the $1 million and go.
That's right. I may have to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
We were talking about this just the other day about what are our options?
Uh-huh.
What do we want to do here? And I live in a warehouse, and mm-hmm. well, my studio's there.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say I live there, but I live in a 7,200 square foot warehouse with my that's where my stuff is.
Well,
and
yeah,
so
yeah,
and it's out in the country, and I love it very much. And you know, there's certain things I could do out there. I also build carnival games.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah. And
build to sell or just
no,
for yourself?
To actually rent here in the store.
Oh,
we're
I see.
We're kind of going that direction.
Okay.
So we're beginning to get into that business. The first order I had, we slimmed down the costume shop to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the first order I had in the toy and the prizes and the games was $750 plus. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never got that big a one hit
yeah.
deal on the costume business.
Yeah.
So. We're beginning to see that that's a possibility that my son may follow that direction.
When you're making the carnival games,
mm-hmm.
do you make a carnival con game or you make a legitimate
no,
game?
No, they're legitimate and they're made for
yeah.
fundraising and that kind
okay.
of thing. And they're wood and they're really nice.
I thought maybe it was something that you sell like just for the fun that they kind of... So talk about that just a little bit.
Sure.
How'd you get into the collection of those? I mean, I guess when you were a kid, you probably had played some of those games and felt like you got conned or what? What got started and what have you got?
To become a magician, okay?
Yeah.
My dad would take me. I was from Memphis, Tennessee. I was born there. And when
it's
I was,
right outside of Graceland, weren't you?
That's it. And when I was 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old, and we moved here when I was 8, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My dad would take me. My dad was only 5'2" tall. He's the tallest man I ever knew. He was
yeah.
just the greatest guy. And he took me to the amusement park there. There was a big amusement park, and they had one of those big roller coasters called the Pippin, I think it was. And he took me take me down the Midway.
Yeah.
And I would see a game. This sticks in my head. There's this game where it was a big Lazy Susan type thing where it's
okay.
turn.
Yeah.
And there were like doors on both sides that were, this was like human size, okay?
Yeah.
That were like the doors in a saloon.
Okay.
And
yeah, swinging door
would,
kind
yeah,
of thing. Yeah.
And
okay.
out would slam this person. Either man or woman,
mm-hmm.
that was a mannequin,
okay.
fully dressed
yeah.
in different ways, whether it was a cowboy or it was a gentleman, and they were all wearing hats.
Okay.
And you had to take a ball and knock the hat off.
Okay.
And
I've never heard
just
of this
keep
game.
Running. I've never seen it since, but it was fascinating to hear the smacking of that and to watch those characters move around and watch people throw balls at it.
Yeah.
It was just something special. It was magical to me. And my dad took me to... A magic show. You know, we passed the rides and games, and went down to the back end where they have all the exhibits and
okay.
you know and the sideshows. And he took me to see a magic show there.
Mm-hmm.
And I, 5 years old, I said, that's what I want to be. I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Okay. And I did. Uh-huh. When I was 14, I got a job working in a toy store selling the Dante magic set.
Hmm.
Okay. And the toy store in this, you know, department store, toy store.
Yeah.
And toy section. And I loved it. I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I met a magician there. And it was my first professional magician to ever meet. And he took me to this, wonderful, kind of an orphanage type of home place.
You know, okay. Okay.
Kind of that kind of thing. And we did a show together.
You and this older guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was wonderful. When he left, he came over to my house and met my folks, and he was a really good guy. And when he left, all right, he was in a white van, and I looked in the back, and there was a Super X back there.
Okay.
And I'd never seen him. I came from a lower income, middle class income family.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I didn't have a lot of money, and nor did I ever have a dream of ever going to Disneyland,
because
we couldn't afford it, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I see this guy, okay, and he comes into my house and meets my folks, and we do the show thing, and he was the Dante magic kid. His name was Dirk Kirkendall. And I didn't know that at the time. I mean, I didn't remember his name. So
I know Kirkendall. That's not the same.
No.
Okay.
This guy's passed.
Mm-hmm.
He was murdered.
Wow.
In Las Vegas.
Okay.
And but I love this guy. I mean, it just was so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me some little things and said goodbye, and tears started running down my cheeks when he left. It was just, that was that emotional.
Yeah.
I become president of the SAM. And I instead of writing up all the stuff, I went to this club or did that or whatever. I wrote stories in there about times where you run into magic.
Learning more about your life.
Mm-hmm. And I wrote the story up about this, okay?
Yeah.
And I got a guy from Buffalo, New York. I can't remember his name right offhand, and I apologize for that. But he said, I knew Dirk Kirkendall.
Wow.
And he said, when Dirk passed away, I've got a lot of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got his itinerary. I think this is the case. Okay. This is the way I remember it. And he says, I looked it up, and that was the same magician you saw in Memphis.
Wow.
Is that cool?
It is very cool.
And I wouldn't have got that had I not been involved in magic and the magic community and the SAM and the IBM. It was wonderful. And what a great story. And then he sent me a whole bunch of his publicity and pictures and all that stuff. And it's just treasure.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about that before. We're going to come back then to the con games in just a minute, carnival games. But along that thread, you and I were talking just off mic before we began about how that there are different levels of magicians and how that people are influenced by people, just as you were, you know, by Dirk, you know, then as well. Talk about that again. I think that was pretty...
Well, about the idea of the spectrum?
Spectrum of magic and magicians.
Well, and having been in a dealer for all these years, I've dealt with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you deal from the simplest to the most complicated.
Yeah.
And there's a spectrum, what I call the spectrum of magic. And on one side is Uncle Joe at the family picnic pulling coins out of my kids' ears, right? And at the other end is arguably the best illusion show of our time. Is probably the David Copperfield show.
Sure.
It would be the best representation of an illusion show. And I don't care how you feel about all of that, but that's, you know, that's the case, I think.
Yeah.
And so in between are all the other support groups for magic. You've got the guys who perform. They're all the close-up, stand-up illusionists and all that sort of thing.
And all the venues where they're working, whether it's going to be in restaurants or cruise ships or corporate dates.
That's right. And then there's builders,
right?
And there's dealers.
Right.
And there's
collectors.
Historians and collectors. And all those different people that go to make up publishers that all go to make up this wonderful spectrum
Correct.
Of magic.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to tell you isn't true, okay? This is a kind of a parable.
An analogy.
Okay. But at the end, David Copperfield's being interviewed, you know, as one of the greatest magicians of our day.
Yeah.
And he says, the interviewer says to him, what made you become a magician? And he says, Uncle Joe at the family picnic pulling a coin out from behind my ear.
Yeah.
Wow. We never know who we touch. We never know how that goes. What a wonderful thing.
That's true.
And I think every magician here can relate to the fact of when they had what inspired them.
Some magic experience.
And one more thing about this that's kind of cool is I wrote a paper back when I was in my 20s, uh-huh. and it's called Romancing the Art.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And it was about why you pick up the wand, and when you do, what path does it take you on?
Okay.
And if you look, I see these magicians, they're going down a path, and all of a sudden they say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a character. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, a character requires acting.
Okay. So say like Jeff Hobson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And he's a character. You right. try to do that and you're not that.
Right. Or Matt King.
Okay.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. that doesn't fit your personality.
Correct.
Or doesn't fit the kind of magic you're doing.
Right.
You're going to waste your time in that.
Right.
Okay. So you're on a path, and it more than likely is a path that inspired you from the very beginning. So if you saw, I'll use this as an example. If you saw a guy do a flea circus and it moved you,
yeah.
you're probably going to do a flea circus.
A good point.
Okay.
Like in Israel, there are so many mentalists because they were inspired by Uri Geller, and
right.
now there are a ton of mentalists.
Now, if you look back on that path,
yeah.
you will see that the things that you were buying
yeah.
and using are things that
moved you along your
moved you
path.
Along that path, and mm-hmm. you'll go right back to where you started.
Interesting. Huh.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool. I hadn't thought about that. Very, very deep. So the Carnival Con Games, so you were at the carnival, and your dad had taken you over to the magic sideshow, and you saw the magician there,
yes.
and that kind of took you down this other path, which we'll talk about escapes and other things a little bit later.
Sure.
But as far as the con games go, so you had a thing where you're throwing the balls at the hat. Well, that wasn't the...
I wasn't doing that. I just saw
you
them
You could
doing
see them
it.
Doing
I was
that.
Only 5 years old.
So how does that lead to any con games?
Oh, this is... Well, it was the fascination of the games in the carnival.
Itself. Okay,
that
gotcha.
That made me do this.
Yes, sir.
Then my dad takes me I collect things that are like historic that are specific to whatever the occasion. So if you come to my shop, I can show you a piece of the old Ironsides, the ship, right?
The original old Ironsides?
Yeah, I've got a piece of it. Okay.
Okay.
Or I've got water from the was sold as a souvenir from the falls.
Saw at Louis Falanga's collection. He's got a little piece of the Kitty Hawk. You know, from the airplane.
Okay, you got it.
Wow. Yeah.
And I've got a piece of the Golden Gate Bridge
mm-hmm.
Cable that when they replaced it, they did it in I think 1936,
mm-hmm.
and they replaced it in 1976, and they took a few pieces. They cut this big
yeah.
cable up.
Yeah.
I can give it to you to hold, and you're holding a piece of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I have a piece of metal that was from the Twin Towers.
Wow.
And it was that when it was shipped to I think it's North Carolina or South Carolina. When that was the metal was taken to reuse,
right?
Okay,
yeah.
And the company there who got it melted, made plaques, and gave them to the families of the people who the firemen and so forth.
Yeah,
and but they put them for sale for like that, and that money went
to the families
to help
yeah.
you know to help that. And so
I've got a torn cigarette from Slidini that he had
there
left.
There you go.
I mean, it's a silly thing.
Well, I got a piece of metal that they were selling for $25. My wife says, what do you want for your birthday? I said, I want this
that,
piece of metal.
Yeah.
I have all kinds of things like that. I have uh-huh. a duck that's carved out of ash from Mount St. Helen. I have
Weird.
Yeah, I have all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so my dad takes me and sets me up on a counter. I was five. Okay.
Yeah.
And this counter, I could remember it. It was really shellacked like 50 times. You can see it was just an old counter.
Yeah, yeah.
But it had red and white stripes.
Okay.
And I remember that very vividly. And onto the right side of that was a doorway, a big, tall doorway. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a piece of vinyl or canvas or whatever they were using
mm-hmm.
at the
yep.
time. And it was white, red and white striped.
Mm-hmm.
And he sets me up on the counter. And all of a sudden, this man comes out wearing a giant suit. And he's like 8 feet tall, and he's big, and he's got a beard, and I was just
had to scare the heck out of you.
It did at first, okay, and then he comes over to me, and he puts his hand on my head, and
yeah.
he just goes, ah, it's just
yeah.
you. It's like, and kind of laughs and says, hi, Andy,
uh-huh.
okay, and I'm freaking out, but I'm not crying.
Yeah,
all right, and he says he talks to me for a few minutes. And then he says, this is for you. And he takes off his ring
mm-hmm.
and puts it over my hand. It was amazing. I've got the ring.
Wow.
And they you can still get them now and then on eBay. You can
uh-huh.
they still find the rings.
Was he a real giant or was he wearing stilts
or
something?
No, he was a giant.
Okay, gotcha.
And he was the tallest man in the world at the time.
Yeah.
And that's how he made his living.
This was a guy in Ripley's?
No, that was another guy out of Alton, Illinois.
Okay, I thought he was around
but,
here.
But this was a guy that was from, I think, Norway or somewhere. Really nice man,
mm-hmm.
all right? And I just never forgot it.
Yeah,
okay?
Of course not.
So sideshows, carnivals, the entire thing was magical to me.
Yeah.
I got to see I was talking to, Lash LaRue.
I remember Lash LaRue. My gosh, okay. A cowboy star.
Lash LaRue. Yeah. And Morris. Black Phil and Morris was his agent.
Philip Morris. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I would have guessed that if he would have asked. That's the only thing I can think of.
And so I was telling him about this, about my...
Yeah.
We got to go backstage and see him do his whip act and all this sort of thing. Uh-huh. And I found out he was the agent. And I went, oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
And he sent me the last... he was the most famous comic book, a Western hero in comic books.
Okay. Right?
And he sent me one that was signed by Lash LaRue.
Wow.
And we had the most wonderful, wonderful experience there. But as that happened, all this came together.
Yeah.
Okay. And I had this interest in this. Years later, the games come up, okay, mm-hmm. and I begin to find out how they're rigged and so forth.
Yeah.
I actually spent two partial summers in the carnival business doing the headless woman illusion.
Actually, as a not a barker, you don't call
them barkers. I was a sideshow guy. Okay. And I would pitch that and would mm-hmm. and I was actually in the carnival for that. So Bruce Walstead from Foley, Alabama, mm-hmm. okay, used to be a detective in Orland Park.
Did he write a book?
Yeah.
Yes, about carnival some of these crime. Carnival crimes. Yeah. Yes, okay.
That's well, we right became friends,
yeah.
and we still are. We're really good friends. Yeah. And so he would do these seminars for police.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in the carnival, so I knew a lot about it.
Sure, sure.
So I got to go and pick pockets police officers. And then we'd give them a little pitch on what to do for, you know, watching for pickpockets.
Uh-huh,
so I'd have these five policemen up there. They're not in their uniforms. They're in suits and stuff. They're there for a seminar. And I would get them lined up, and I'd pretend I'm a professor of body language.
Okay.
Okay, and then I'd move them around.
Yeah.
And like, I would steal their stuff.
Like Ricky Dunn or somebody.
Yeah, yeah. It was really fun. And mm-hmm. and I stole everything but their gun.
Yeah.
One guy got his room key five times. And they got, you know, they got into it then after a minute or two, they realized it was that. But it was really fun to do this. And that was all about...
how to protect yourself from being conned, basically.
Being conned
and for the police to watch out for these kinds of conmen.
And this was just right in my...
Your backyard,
and so we started. I started getting in. Involved
so you know how to rig some of these games.
And years, well, before I even met him, I would go on TV here in this area, and I would talk about how these games. I'd not go to schools. I'm sorry, and I talked about how these games work,
like three card money and kind
well,
of things.
Well, no, it was more like the some of the bigger things like the swinger, you know, with the ball and then knocks down the pin.
Yeah.
And these things, and try to convince these kids, you know, when they go to the carnival, to be careful what they do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because these are rigged. And when I did the show in Atlanta for the SAM.
Yeah, that's where I saw what you brought. Yeah.
Okay. There was a guy there who was doing a bottle up on a little wooden platform.
Explain what that is.
It's a bottle. You take a meat fork that you can buy for a dollar at the dollar store.
Okay.
And you have a bottle that's a Coke bottle or a beer bottle sitting on a little platform that's mm-hmm. off the ground about 4 inches. And it's kind of tilted. And it has a little edge to it. And you try to lift the bottle up and set it up on that little platform. And if it falls all the way over, you lose. And if it doesn't, you know, you win.
Yeah. Okay.
And so he can set it up over and over again. All right?
Yeah.
And then when he tries it for money, mm-hmm. it falls over every time.
How would that be?
It's really cool the way it works too. And I got to know this guy, and he was a young guy. He just came in
mm-hmm.
and did this when we were doing that Atlanta show, which was a cool show, by the way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he said, "I said I want one of these. I said, would you do me a favor and tell me how much money have you taken somebody for?"
Yeah, I'd be curious.
This game?
Good question. Yeah.
Okay. One person, how much money did you take?
Yeah, not for all night, but just one guy.
Just that one guy.
Yeah.
And he said this, and he's a young guy too. He's uh-huh. like in his mid-20s. And he goes, I don't have the record, but it's $1,808.
In one night, one
guy? One game.
In one game from one guy.
One guy, yeah.
Huh.
That's how crazy this is.
I think it's kind of like gambling. That some people have almost an addiction. They're like a slot machine. So I'm going to get my money back. I'm going to get my money back this next one. This
well,
next
if
one.
I can coax you into that. So what happens is that I can
So it's not just the game. It's the
guy doing it, right?
Yeah.
The agent. And they are rough.
Yeah.
I mean, they really know their thing. So I can say to you, look, one more try. You set up, just practice it.
Yeah.
And it sets up. And then I can say, okay, I'll give you all your money back and I'll give you this TV set. All right.
Well, yeah, let me try it. Okay. Here's another dollar.
And it's only going to cost you double what you've got.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can set it up, you get your money back. If you can't, you have to double it.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got 200 in this,
yeah, of course
you're 400, yeah. Wow. Right? And pretty soon they're trying to get their money back.
Of course.
And greed overpowers all sense of reason.
That's a good point. That's the bottom line of how that all works on this.
Works, yeah.
There's a lot of money then in that. Well, of all those games, what and the things you collected, what is your favorite of the games?
I like probably the Over the Rail.
And that is what?
And it's a thing where it's a box that was – it's a box that's about 2 feet long. And 6 foot six, I'm sorry, 2 feet long and about 6 inches or 8 inches high.
Hi, mm-hmm.
And it's got at one end of it, it's got a thing that flips up, a chute, kind of, it's just a wooden board,
okay,
with a little track in it. And mm-hmm. you take a ski ball and you drop it down into the little box, and it jumps over a rail. If it jumps over the rail and doesn't touch it,
mm-hmm.
you win, okay?
Okay.
And if it touches that or falls on the other side of the rail, You lose,
okay.
It was made illegal, I think, in 1959. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anyone play it except for on a Phil Morris movie where he was in. He was in a movie, and I saw him play it in the background. But it is, I could send my kid to college with this thing. I mean,
wow.
It is amazingly rough.
Yeah.
But you take it and you drop the ball down of this little chute.
And it kind of hits something and bumps
it hits
over.
It bumps over it.
You showed me that before. That
yeah.
is kind of a clever thing because you, at your will, you can have them win or lose.
Those are called two-way games. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And or trap games.
Okay.
And they're very common. But
you say trap because?
Because it traps you.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what they refer to it in. And so it's a fascinating game. I also like the scissor bucket, which I was able to get one of those, and they're rare.
And what is
it's,
that?
It's like the bushel basket, but it's a wooden thing that you
Toss a ball in and it bounces and back out
right.
into. Okay.
And it's a wonderful game. But
that's one of those games also. That's
yeah.
a two-way game.
Yeah, oh, right? I'm just yeah. you asked me about
yeah. yeah
these games. These are
yeah.
these are all two-way games.
Okay. Okay.
And most of the things in the carnival either work on a percentage basis. So you're paying. If you're going to get a prize, you're probably they're getting 10 times the amount of the mm-hmm. cost of the prize.
You kind of let them win a little bit.
Yeah, you do, and it's mm-hmm. okay. And then with the really big stuff, the bigger the prize, the more the game is going to be rigged.
Yeah, but you want to let somebody walk down the midway with one of these big dolls, because where do you get that? Hey, over at Andy Dallas's place.
But that's a show.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not... oh, no, I never knew that.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense, too. Yeah, over there. So he's sending you business.
That's right.
Huh. Now I feel even worse.
And it's usually a kid, one of yeah. the Carney guy's kid.
Yeah, 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 because it's a young guy.
Big thing
it's like,
goes,
I can do it,
where
you
did
can
you
do
get
it.
That? Oh,
yeah.
Over there.
Yeah, an adult thinks, a little kid got that. Huh. Well, darn you. Okay.
But there are all kinds of those games, and they're very clever.
Uh-huh.
And some are... Some are, you know, what's really cool about that box, and it's all mechanical. I love mechanical
uh-huh.
games
yeah.
of any kind.
Yeah.
And this thing.
They got a horse race thing, don't you? It's a mechanical thing.
I do. It's so cool.
Tell me about that.
I tell you what, I went on eBay. I saw I had a game like this. It was a toy.
Uh-huh.
And what it did, you'd pull the string and it would spin a weight that would shoot these little ball bearings up and move the horses.
Yes.
And I thought that was such a cool idea, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm on eBay one day and I see this game. It's got 8 horses on it, and they're little horses. They're only about 3 inches, right? And they are so cool. And you got it's all wood, and it's got these little wooden tracks in there.
Yes, the horses are running down the slot.
Down the slot. And so I bought it, and the guy that sold it to me was kind of a gruff guy, and I do everything by the book.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, when I'm on eBay or on PayPal, I'm not going to vary from that.
Yeah.
And he called me up and said that I should give him, before it ever arrived, I should let the money, release the money. Well, the money was substantial.
Yeah.
So, as a matter of fact, it was the most expensive game that I had ever bought.
Mm-hmm.
So, it turns out it gets there in my, and I told him I wouldn't do it, you know, but I have to go by, you know, because he wants me to give him the, I forgot what it's called, but... You have to say that got there, it arrived okay.
All right, it had to be verified or something,
yeah,
or you
all
can
that
get
kind of
yeah.
thing. Mm-hmm. There are like 5 things you need.
Yes,
it was packed right.
Right.
And so Once you do that and you give him that, then the money's released.
It's transferred, yeah.
So at that point, I got the thing in, and it had been not packed properly as it should have,
yeah.
And it had some breakage to it. It mm-hmm. had some interior damage to the cabinet and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, it's a 1931 game. There's only a few of them in existence.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, because this is, you know, I spent all this money, and now that money's at risk.
Yeah.
So at that point, I called up them, and I said, well, the eBay and PayPal.
Right.
And I asked them what to do, and they said, what we want you to do is we want you to repack it and send it back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We'll release your money with all the shipping and everything.
Okay.
Okay? Now, what happened at his end? And he got mad at me because I wouldn't do this. And so it was kind of a bad relationship. But he had written it all on their, all the emails and stuff on their website.
Yeah.
And so I stuck to my guns on this thing. And all of a sudden, about 4 or 5 days later, I took 2 hours to pack this thing. I mean,
yeah.
I wanted, this is still a 1931
yeah.
wonderful game.
Yeah.
And so I love to be around these things. So the money I can replace the games are just something special for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so 4 days go by, and there comes UPS.
Mm-hmm.
And they delivered the game.
What?
The guy refused it.
Huh.
So I let it sit for 10 years.
Yeah.
In the box. I never
opened it.
Waiting to see if somebody would call me about this, and
yeah.
They never did.
Because you got your money back, and then and plus the broken game.
So it's the most expensive game I never bought.
Never bought.
And it's a beautiful little game. And when
you put it back together.
I got it in my living room right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what happens is you put a coin in, and it starts a motor up. And it's made in 1931. And as the horses then will be moved by ball bearings from this motor spinning.
Right.
And it'll go all the way up, and then it has a light that whichever one it wins, and a little wire that pushes them back.
Is it a con game, or is it
a legitimate game? Yeah.
Now, how many games altogether would you say that you have in the collection?
In my whole collection?
Yeah.
About 80.
80, wow. And still collecting? Still looking for it?
No, I'm not. I don't. Yeah, well, kind of done.
There are probably only a finite number of games anyhow
it's really, you can have a huge collection.
Oh, could you? Okay.
There were I have a collection of old pinball machines from 1927.
Yes. Right, pachinko games and all that, yeah.
I don't even do pachinko. These are strictly, you know, pinball games that were made. They're all mechanical, and they're all tabletop mm-hmm. games, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Back in that day, when 1927 Wiffle was out, that was the first pinball ever made. I've got one of those, okay? Mm-hmm.
And how many pinball machines?
I only have about, these don't have any electricity to them, okay? I only have about, I'd say, probably 10 or 11,
mm-hmm.
all right?
But mechanical and not electric.
Yeah, they mm-hmm. don't have flippers on them or anything. You just shoot them like like Bagatelle.
Yeah.
And so I get these games. They were between 19. It hit in 1930.
Okay.
And Bally and Gottlieb went up against each other, and I think the Gottlieb sold 60,000. And prior to that, they'd only been sold. You know, they were only selling games for like 100 or 200.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit 60,000, and I think Bally got 40,000, and that started the Bally Company.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, so mm-hmm. the Bally Company is now a multi-billion-dollar international.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, this has the most sophisticated games. It all started with a box with nails in it.
That's funny.
And so, anyway, there was 150 makers after that.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got all these machines out there. There's 150 of them. I only wanted the machines that had some significance to something or to me.
Sure.
And so I'd never made my collection there. They're guys, even guys in our club,
mm-hmm.
that have a much better collection than I've got. But there's a guy in Marvelous Marvin in Detroit.
I've been there.
I've seen him.
Yeah, that's an amazing collection.
Isn't that cool?
Yes.
When I went there,
he died. He's not.
I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure that I think he did. Still got the place. But I think
I saw him at Abbott's a couple of years ago, I think.
I may be wrong then, but I thought that he had passed.
He was so cool. I went to Detroit on a problem with a club we had there, and they took me out to the Ford plant and let me see mm-hmm. the progress.
Watch the
them do it. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. They were really wonderful. And then they took me to. They said, "What do you like?" And I said, "I like coin operated games." Oh, we got them. They took me to Marvelous Marvin.
Yeah,
he met me there. I was a president. No, I was first vice president.
Yeah,
and at that time. And so he took me and wouldn't let me spend anything there.
Yeah.
Played all these games that I'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
I just was in heaven. I mean, I loved
him. Sure,
yeah. He was a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
So he's going to show me Hundi 500, okay. Right?
Yep.
And I knew the trick because
yep.
I do it.
Yep.
And so he goes through and he goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 $1 bills.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, changes them to hundreds. And he goes, 1, 2, 3 Darn, I spent those two. But I loved it. Yeah. I loved the visit. And they were wonderful people there.
Well, you talked about Dirk being the Kirkendall being a magician. So mm-hmm. he didn't do escapes. At what point did you kind of get involved in an escapes?
1976. I always had an interest in it. And in 1976.
Because of Houdini?
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, like everybody did.
Yeah.
But I took it to an extreme.
Okay.
And in 1976, I had already bought a straitjacket that was gimmicked.
Uh-huh.
All right. But I was having real trouble finding a real one.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 1976, I got the opportunity to hang from a 21-story building.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is when my name changed. My real name was Andy or Andrew Dobronsky,
mm-hmm.
and I changed it legally to Dallas, and so
because it had a better ring to it.
Yeah, and I was so tired of listening. You know, anything was done
name.
On the massacre
yeah.
my name.
Yeah,
and so it's Dobronski, and Dombrowski, and nothing against that, but it was just hard for them to do.
Sure, I understand.
Dallas, and by the way, the first time they did it, they spelled it with two L's. So it was pretty funny.
Two L. You do spell with two L's.
Oh, I'm sorry. With one L.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm sorry. And it was funny. So it was the biggest escape that I'd done. After that escape, I was on several Houdini biographies, you know, that they did, you know.
Yeah.
That played nationally on TV.
Like PBS and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. I was on two of those.
And that's what inspired you, thinking, well, hey, I'm getting more publicity on this than I am for magic or anything.
Well, yeah,
else.
Well, I was really liking it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really fun to do, but I didn't like
strictly
it
strictly straight
jacket. No, I did. I had that, but then I started making things. I got to go to, in 1980, I was on the Thrill Stage at Chicago Fest.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was there doing the straight jacket and several other effects that I've done.
Yeah.
But my I've always been involved in and this is a story too. I've always been involved in the art of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the artistic was just eating me up. I mean, I wanted to make it look beautiful.
Which is, let me just have an aside right here. As I was giving a little bit of intro with you, I meant to conclude that by saying, and also this man, Andy Dallas, has the most beautiful zombie routine of anybody I have ever seen, and to date I still think you do the best zombie, and it's artful. When you said that's exactly what it is, it's very artistic when you present that.
Well, so, thank you very much. And you know what, I've got 7 pieces like that.
Okay.
That are, you know, that are wonderful pieces to me that I've did that for a reason.
Yeah.
And
but it was the
we
escapes.
Get into that the escape stuff I,
you start doing being
start
artful.
Building it or developing it or whatever. As a matter of fact, later on, I can't remember the date. I think it's 94. I got a call from, 10 years earlier than that, I mm-hmm. got a call from That's Incredible. It was a national television show.
Yeah, Fran Tarkenton.
And they wanted to film an underwater escape that I was doing, but they wanted cameras on it.
Okay.
Now, in the true tradition of Houdini, you didn't use picks and stuff. You got out and everything was still locked.
Correct.
Right? So there's always a mystery to it.
That's
except for
out.
A few things, mm-hmm. like the 50-foot rope. Escape and the
straitjacket
he would do up front, but everything else was
behind a curtain,
behind
the
curtain or
in the water.
Yeah, and would not make any sense.
Correct.
So underwater, I could disperse the top water, and you couldn't see in there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I could get out the way it was made.
Okay.
And so, 10 years later, I get a call from I started work. They couldn't do it because I couldn't let them down there underwater. They
mm-hmm.
wanted to see it underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that moment, I started working on an idea that would.
Allow them to
see it from any position underneath the water.
360 underwater.
Yeah, underwater. Okay. And I was the only one. 10 years later, I get a call from Spain.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to come to Spain and do an underwater escape on the #1 television show in Spain.
Yeah.
Or in Europe.
Yeah.
And it was in Madrid. I had to go to Madrid. So they call me and I said, I've got just the thing. And they were going to have divers in the water with cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And they had portholes in the tank.
Huh.
And it was 18 feet deep.
Okay.
And so I did a bet, and I had to bring it in my luggage.
Okay.
Because you could have extra luggage during the time. It wasn't. So I built it within 10 days. I had my seamstress whip it up.
Mm-hmm.
We got it. I rented a hotel pool.
Okay, to practice.
For 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
Brought my crew in, and we did it over and over again until I was satisfied. And then 2 days later, I was off to Spain
mm-hmm.
with this piece, and it worked out really well.
Wow.
And
did they record that back then?
Yeah. There's a video of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly. I have one somewhere, but I can't find it right now.
Do you have anything on YouTube as well?
No.
Any of your video?
No. Mm-hmm. And so they want to do it. There have been people wanting to do it or want to take lessons from me on the zombie.
Mm-hmm.
I've created a new zombie, and after this is over, I'll let you take a look at it
okay. And
play with it. So it's a whole nother concept. It's my concept.
Interesting. Okay.
The gimmick is still the same gimmick.
Okay.
Okay. So, but it's handles so masterful.
Okay.
Oh, you'll love it.
Where did you work? And I always find it interesting about escapes, you know, to be that part of a magic show to do some escapes, but the larger things like the upside down straitjacket in particular, or the water escape and things like that are more for promoting a show or something, or for television. I mean, where did you do these
Well,
things?
I do the triple death trap, which I invented, which worked on 4 garage door springs and took
triple
20
death
minutes.
Trap.
Yeah. Took 20 minutes to cock, and you had to use a car jack.
Gemini.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I do it in, you know, back in those days, they had malls
mm-hmm, yeah.
and outdoor festivals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was back in the 90s. And I started doing this one for malls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go in with this trap, and I'll show you pictures of it and everything. But it's an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we would fill it full of balloons. And in the very center of this thing, you had spikes that would come in from both sides and on from the top. So it was a triple death trap.
Okay.
And these things, once that top fell, it would shoot off the two on the sides. If you were in that little center section,
you are dead.
Off, you're dead. Okay, no doubt about it.
Wow.
It's 4 garage door springs. So I did it 68 times. I think I've done it 68 times.
Gee.
The last time I did it, the guy wanted to see it. And when we were doing a big fundraiser, and it was going to make a lot of money, and they offered me $5,000
yeah.
to do a show and that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in 2002, and it's the last time I'll ever do it.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's
pretty scary.
It was scary.
Yeah.
All right.
And there's real danger involved.
Yeah. And the problem with it was that although it had safeties in it, if you make a mistake,
yeah,
it's a fatal one.
Wow.
And so I was doing that, I'm glad I didn't get killed in it.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do
I'm
is
sure your
at
wife
the
too.
Beginning, at the beginning, yeah, at my poor wife, at the beginning of this thing, it filled it with balloons. Okay.
Yep.
And it would be sitting at the front of the stage. And I'm coming on, okay?
Yeah.
So as they play the music for me to come on, this plays the music, and this thing just goes off. Bam!
Yeah.
All right? And breaks every balloon in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes off. It really goes off. I mean,
yeah.
you can feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then my crew would take it back, and I'd start the show. And 20 minutes later, it's done,
it back, yeah.
and we'd do the escape. So
wow.
I'd have 20 minutes to do the magic show.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And it was a big hit, and people loved it. And so I was also doing my favorite escape is the... There's a thing called the strap box that I created that I will show it to you. I can't do it right now. I'm a little too heavy, but it's a beautiful piece.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually the most fun part for me was making it look beautiful
mm-hmm.
and making
Again,
it look
being artistic.
Scary
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and making
mm-hmm.
it do what it's supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And all, whether it was a bag or it was a box or it was anything, I wanted to do something more with it.
Yeah.
Which by the way, I'm the inventor of the no tear paper tear 2.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And so what I did is I took the number one, the first one, the no tear paper
yes,
tear.
Yes, right.
And I put it on my dining room table, and I thought, what can I do to make it
improve
special?
This? Mm-hmm.
And not even improve it. I just wanted, you know, I'm just playing
oh,
with it.
Different.
What can I
okay.
do?
Yeah,
all right?
For a presentation.
And I tore a hole in it, which I knew that they'd done before. You know, they had a hole in it. They would show that the hole didn't
yes.
restore,
didn't,
right?
Right, right, right.
So I tore a hole in it, and I had it sitting on the dining room table. My wife's making lunch, and I looked down at the table, and I looked down where I tore that hole out, and I said, I can restore that hole. I can do that.
Okay.
And I did. And that's Mark
that
Mason
2.0.
Put it out. We
yeah.
sold over 2,000 worldwide.
Yeah.
It is a dynamite effect.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, you know, it is, the effect is you've got the Anderson.
Newspaper tear.
Anderson flash restoration.
Oh yes, okay.
Okay, which is then blended into, and I remember in Anderson's lecture, he says, I wouldn't do this if I was a pro because it's too hard to make.
Yeah.
You know, I have to make them all every day, you know,
yeah.
it would be bad. So this guy comes up with it in 97 and makes the no tear paper tear, which is already torn, which mm-hmm. uses, you know, uses a gimmick to hold them together. It's really sweet. Mm-hmm. And then I took it in 97, and for 7 years or 8 years, I did the trick. And then I saw Mason at the 4F.
Yeah.
And I showed it to him, and I said to him, Mark and I are friends.
Yeah.
I've never seen the business side of him come out. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we would have drinks and with wives and yeah. go out to dinner and everything. So, and Mark also is really, really loves my zombie.
Yeah.
So we were talking about it, and I said, Mark, I see him in the hallway. And I said, Mark, I said, I've got something to show you. And he's what? And I said, it's the no tear paper tear. Mm-hmm. And he goes, just rolls his eyes. All right. And says, Andy, you know, and he goes through this thing. He says, every 3 months, somebody comes to me with an improvement on this. And it never is an improvement.
Yeah.
He says, and he goes over the litany of these guys. And I said, well, Mark, this might be the same. I mm-hmm. said, but what's wrong? Just take a look at it.
Yeah.
And so I show it to him, and he stood there staring at it from where I am to where you are.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that close.
Yeah.
And I restored the hole. Okay.
Right.
And he had no idea. He was totally floored. He just mm-hmm. looked at me and he says, and I said, I fooled you, didn't I? And he shakes his head, yes. And he says, now, if you want to keep this, da 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 da, you know,
yeah.
I'm not going to do it. Can you show me how it works?
Right.
And I said, sure. I said, I am showing you this because we might be able to work something out.
Right, right.
Because I've done it for 7 or 8 years. And so he does, and he took it, and it's been a
yeah,
big
great
major trick. Yeah.
As we start to wrap up over here, a couple of last things. One is that as being a past president of the SAM, the next guy coming up is from Hawaii, I understand. What is his name, or who is it?
I can't
pronounce his name.
Yeah, I can't either.
Yeah, yeah.
You caught me on this one. I apologize.
You're still involved, you know, and going to the conventions and everything?
Well, this year I'm not going to go for the first year.
It's in Orlando.
Yes, and I'm not going to go this year.
What's interesting, I think this coming year, I'm not going to be able to make it this year. I really wish I could, but I can't. But next year is going to be in Las Vegas. But what's interesting, I think it's in January or February. It's going to be mm-hmm. kind of...
They're trying different things.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, and they're also trying different formats and... Mm-hmm. And different ideas on it. And I think that's a good thing. And I think the IBM's doing the same.
They're having to do something, I think.
Yeah.
All the major conventions are going to have to compete with those that are more successful from the standpoint of having more registrants. I mean, both the IBM and SAM have done well when we have combined our
conventions. And I was on
conventions.
Those. You know, I was involved in that.
Yep.
Very big.
Yep.
I was on the LLC on those.
And those have been very successful, but independently, there are only a few hundred people, as opposed to, let's say, like Magi Fest, you know, that with Joshua Jay and Andy Gladwin that's so successful. And that they are bringing in a lot of young people, and they change the format. There are no contests, and they have TED Talk types of things, and obviously Magic Live, which sells out every year. But even this year, it wasn't until just about a month ago, whenever that they actually had sold out for this coming year. Usually, they sell out so much more quickly, so it was kind of interesting. So, things have got to change.
I will say this though, and having been involved in this twice, that it is highly political, and what. Is interesting is when you get into this kind of situation, and I'm not being negative, I mean sincerely,
yeah.
there are those who would like to see it blend all the way, and I don't think that's a good idea
mm-hmm.
because...
I mean the two organizations are becoming one?
Yeah, becoming one. Internationally and nationally are two different things,
mm-hmm.
okay? So we can have a veterans program.
Okay, good point.
All right?
Sure.
And on the other side, you know, that would be really difficult to do.
I understand. Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but they all, it's like, it's almost like the Baptists and the Methodists.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm, okay.
There are nuances that put us into a different category.
Yes.
And fill a need.
Yeah.
And the IBM fills a need.
Correct.
And they're two very different groups, and they have different philosophies, and there are people in there.
That's right.
Who are pretty much sold on that idea.
Until they die.
Yes.
Yeah, and then a lot of people, and that's the problem, I think that some of these things will be taken to their graves, and the organization may go with them instead of actually making changes as they should be along the way so that they'll be dying out. I mean...
Well, it's really interesting, too, and again, being a dealer.
Yeah.
And let me give it to you from the standpoint of what we have to sell.
Sure.
Okay?
It's all about money.
Actually, it's really interesting. We were trying to go for the youth,
mm-hmm.
okay? But that's not where it's at. The youth have a catalog, a magazine that you'll never get to the end of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is called the internet.
It's in color.
Yeah.
Video. Correspond with it and everything.
Yeah.
But when they get to be between the ages of 28 and 31, That's, mm-hmm. that's an average.
Yeah.
Okay. They're looking for a more mature thing to do in magic. They want to be recognized by the magic community.
Good point.
So what do we sell? We sell a card.
Yeah.
That says you are recognized by the magic community.
Yes.
Right? And we
so you're somebody.
That's right. You are special in this mm-hmm. group.
Yes.
And that is where we must keep our prestige.
I agree with that.
Okay.
Anybody can print a card, but you can't print up one necessarily that makes you a member of an organization
right.
that of being accepted. So you can show people that, hey, I'm a member of this larger organization, which reminds me years ago of the It's a Wonderful Life. I remember with Jimmy Stewart whenever that he was a kid and was saying, I'm a member of the National Geographic Society. You know, whenever he got a membership to the magazine, he had a card. And it's
sure.
like, I'm somebody.
That's
you know,
right.
And that's important, I think.
And also you back it up.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But what you really want to watch out for is not letting others take your ground.
Good point.
Okay.
I see what you're saying.
And so that's where this all becomes political.
Political. Yep. Yep.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Yep. Well, the final thing I was going to ask you as we conclude was, of course, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so in conclusion, what would be your magic word? Not necessarily a word, but could be a sentence, a phrase, a philosophy of life. What do you live by? What's important to you?
Okay. This is my philosophy.
Okay. I'm loving it already.
I have three of them, but I'll give you the one that's my favorite.
Okay.
Okay. I really should give you all three of them, but here we go. There was a movie.
We can build up.
Okay. There was a movie called Max Dugan Returns.
I remember that. Okay. Yes. It was a magician.
Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He played a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. And he had, and I can't remember this guy's name out of hand, but one of my favorite actors from years ago was his grandfather, who he didn't know was his grandfather, who comes to visit.
Somebody like a Max Van Sydow, an older actor.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
The movie was okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't anything special, but it had a line in it that just made me go nuts. Mm-hmm. I love this line. So he's talking, the grandfather's talking to his grandson, which is Matthew Broderick.
Yes.
And he's a senior in high school. And he says to him, he says, I want you to graduate from high school. Mm-hmm. I want you to go to college. And I want you to major in philosophy.
Hmm.
And Matthew looks at him and says, and I'm paraphrasing here, and says, is there a lot of money in philosophy? And the response was choice. And he goes, there is if you have the right one.
Well, it is if you have the right one, right philosophy of life. Huh.
Is that cool? Or
that is deep, yeah.
Okay, and then the other one is with Mary Tyler Moore and Preston, the guy who did the Preston.
Robert Preston, sure.
And they were doing a made-for-TV movie in the, I think, the early 90s or late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And he is playing a journalist. And she is his ingenue. And mm-hmm. they walk into his apartment for the first time. And there on the wall is a little picture the size of an 8x10, which is what we use, right?
Yep, right.
But it's lengthwise, not up and down, right?
Okay.
And she sees it on the wall. And she goes, oh, my gosh. You won the Pulitzer Prize, and the president's giving it to you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, okay.
On the steps of the White House or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And his response was choice. He says, yeah, but that picture's not on his wall.
Huh. So it's important to me, but not so much to him, to the person.
So the idea is
yeah.
for me to get my picture on your wall, which does not mean physically, mentally.
Yeah.
You can, that's an amazing statement if you think about it, to get my picture on your wall. It's not just me doing a trick. It's to get my picture on your wall.
On your mental wall,
in
your mind, that you'll never forget
away,
that
that's
image.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's what this is about, isn't it?
Wow. I've never heard that. That is wonderful.
And then the last one is this, and I just heard it in a Hallmark thing. It was a Hallmark, I wasn't doing physically well over Christmas, and I was watching a lot of the Hallmark movies,
uh-huh.
and one of these... Well, this was my last one, and it's new, and I hope I get it right. And it says, death is a heartache
mm-hmm.
that will never heal.
I agree.
And love is a memory that no one can steal.
Love is a memory that no one can steal.
And the point of that is, I have four grandchildren now.
Yeah.
The oldest being seven. I never had grandparents. I only had a grandmother. That was it. Who mm-hmm. lived with us until she was 86, and she was wonderful. But I never met my grandfathers or my other grandmother. I'm a grandfather.
Yeah.
Four, right?
Right.
And the oldest is seven. And what I'm doing right now with you and with everybody else that I'm around is I'm trying to create a memory.
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot be stolen.
And pass on that love that they can never...
That's it.
Yeah, rob that treasure.
That's what this is about.
Wow. That's great. Well, Andy, thank you very much. That was a delight and a very fast chat. You know, I didn't realize what time was getting to be. That, man, you covered a lot of territory. You've lived quite a life, and you are only halfway there.
Yeah, you are a great interviewer, so thank you.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Andy Dallas, and this is Scotty out. Well, thank you, Andy. That was delightful. I appreciate the time you gave me and also the advice you were giving some listeners. And I hope that some of you perhaps got a few little nuggets along the way from Andy that he was sharing with you. And if ever you happen to go to Champaign, Illinois, or in that central Illinois part of the state, you need to stop by and visit. And Andy will be just delighted to give you a tour of his place and also to show you some of his collection of the of those carnival con games. It's pretty fascinating. And the stuff that he makes and this is as well as the stuff, of course, that he collects. So again, I want to thank Andy Dallas for being my guest this week. And as I said, you should always help support the brick and mortar magic shops. And this is one of the last few remaining in the United States. Well, speaking of supporting magic shops, now it's time for another Three for Thursday. This is going to be the opportunity where we get to give you my personal opinions on a few tricks that are available now from your favorite magic dealer that come from Murphy's Magic Supplies. And if you don't have a brick-and-mortar magic shop near you, then you can, of course, purchase your magic through online magic shops such as the Magic Word Podcast. This week, we're going to go through three different tricks that are quite dissimilar, but yet all have some common thread. The first trick up for review this week is called Box Office by Jeremy Marwani, and this is produced by Magic Dream in France. To begin with, I had requested this from Murphy's to take a look at because I've always enjoyed Screen Test that Alakazam sells, but I've done my own variation on that, which I performed at the Magic Castle when I was doing close-up a few years ago. I've always enjoyed movies, and I thought this might have something a little bit different, and indeed it does. I would say this is pretty clever. I would say also that this is definitely for close-up. This is not something that you can do for stage or parlor. It is something that you could do if you want to do a walk-around type of situation in a restaurant where you're going to be having a table. You could do this, I guess, from your pockets, but the cards themselves are fairly large. They're larger than a postcard. Well, maybe about the size, I guess, of a postcard, maybe, or a club card. They are nice laminated, so they can be wiped off if you happen to spill something on them or get something sticky. They are well made, and I guess actually they are a pretty good size that they can fit inside of your jacket pocket, but it would take up a little bit of space, and if you are concerned about pocket management, this is just something additional that you'd have to carry around and have to decide whether or not this is going to be a strong enough effect to put into your act and to warrant giving it some real estate in your jacket. What you receive are 10 cards, as I said, well-made cards that are laminated, and on the front and the back are 10 different poster replicas. So these are movie posters that are small. So if you stop and think about it, it's about postage stamp size in order to get the 10 posters on the front and the back. And the idea on what you're going to be doing, essentially the effect is a volunteer will select a card, they look at a movie, they just think of the movie, they can shuffle the card back in, and you are able to divine which movie it is that they have selected. So again, they're really not giving you any indication. You're not fishing or anything like that. It's just that as you place the cards down, and whenever that they would see the card that has their poster prediction on it, they're to slap their hand on top of it, and then you can tell them which movie that it was. It is pretty clever. It's not finicky at all. It's something that you would be able to see if you have pretty good eyesight, wear glasses, or the lighting is good. As you get a little bit older, it might be a little bit more difficult for some to see the little what shall I say, the gimmick, the what it is that you need to know or what you need to see. But it's not that difficult, certainly. I like it. Now, as a kicker, if you want, you can add this to it. There is an additional card that has the movie ranking in the top 100, let's say, of these movies. And it's this way that you can pull another envelope out of your pocket, and it will relate to that number. So in other words, that if they selected Spider-Man and it ranked number 15, whenever that they look at that card to see what the ranking is, they see it's number 15. And then when you pull out the envelope, and inside the envelope there's a prediction which says you will select the movie that's ranked number 15. The effect, again, is okay. I think there are some other things as far as movie predictions that might be a little bit stronger. This is just another movie prediction. And I say another one, there are several that are out there. As I mentioned, Screen Test, which I've always enjoyed and recommend. There are other kinds of things you can do that require gimmicks, some that don't. But this has some good applications that might be able to be applied to other kinds of things. The thing that Jeremy has done here has added something that is a little bit new and not that I've seen before. And again, it's nice. However, that you do have to, again, make some real estate, some room for the real estate, I guess, in your jacket to carry this around and to do. And it is, again, something that's going to be needed to be performed before a relatively small audience because, again, the posters are about postage stamp size. And that if some people are having some difficulty seeing this, or if you're working in a club or it's in a restaurant where it's dimly lit, it might be difficult for some people to see the posters. But in a well-lit room, or for young people, certainly, then they will be able to see that, although some of the young people may not know some of the movies that are on here, but that's okay. There are some old movies and new movies as well. This is, again, called Box Office by Jeremy Marwani from Magic Dream, and this comes recommended with some reservation, and my reservation is just that it's just okay. It's not the best. It's a clever method, but there are other things, I think, that are ways of selecting movies and predicting the movie that are stronger than this. So it's okay. So it's recommended with reservation. Next up is a trick called Click from Agus Tijoux, and this is spelled K-L-I-K. And what you receive are a couple of gimmick cards that you can slide into your deck. Now, this comes in a red or blue, so be sure whenever that you're ordering that you know what color deck that you prefer, and this way that you won't be disappointed if you get one color that doesn't fit the decks that you typically use. These are bicycle back cards, by the way, and the gimmick I can explain because they're so well made you can't make them on your own, but essentially you will have a card selected and then held by the spectator, and they can see that the card they're holding is clearly not the card that they had selected. Yet when you take a picture of them with their phone or yours, that it turns into their card. Essentially what this is allowing you to use the technology of the phone and the contrast, the way that the phone takes the photo, that a couple of the pips, one or two of the pips, depending upon which one of the cards you're using, whether it's the three of spades going to the two of spades, or whether it's the eight of clubs going to the six of clubs, that there are some pips in the middle of the card, the black card, that essentially disappear when you take a photo. Now, it doesn't have to be taken with the flash on, because this can be taken outside or in a well-lit room. It's just that you need to make sure whenever that you're taking the photo that it has the contrast set properly. And if it doesn't work, you just take another picture. You delete the photo and then take another one. He gives you little tips on how to do this. This is something that comes with not only the gimmick cards, but of course then an online instructional videos, so this way you understand how to do it and some of the pitfalls, if you will. Again, just some lighting things that you need to be conscientious of when you're doing this. And it's one of those things, again, that is pretty darn strong. Personally, there's I think a really stronger effect that uses what's called a phantom card that SEO Magic sells, and it is really cool. The trick that comes with it comes with a black deck, and it's a clever routine. However, that the one that I used was an idea that Chip Romero had given me by putting it into a this little card, if you will. It looks like a negative from film going into a card wallet, and whenever that you take a photo with the flash, the card appears. It cannot be seen with the flash nor in bright light. It only shows up on your camera whenever that the photo is taken. So you can take the picture with the volunteer's phone, and you have a card selected. Basically, that's a card that that shows up. This one is not something that, although you can hand this out, that is, in fact, that in the instructions, it tells you that you show the person that obviously you got the wrong card. Here you hold the card, and as they're holding the card, then they are facing the card towards you, and they're just seeing the back of the card. So when you take the picture and then take the card back from them, you can do a top change or whatever in order to change it out for the correct card. But whenever they look at the photo, it is now changed to their correct card. It's a very clever thing, and I think is certainly well worth your investment of a few bucks into this. And I said, you not only get one, but two cards, so you can repeat this. One of the beautiful things about this that I really like is that it's not using the technology of your phone nor the phone of your volunteer, but it's something that's using the technology of the card and how that these things are specially coded and printed. But more importantly, this is something that can be taken with the volunteer's phone, and they go around and they can show this to all their friends saying, look at this, and they can tell the story, and the story builds. And they won't take that off the phone. It'll stay there for a long time. And so that's what helps build your image. And again, I think it's a pretty good trick, something I would recommend. I like it. It's called Click by Agus Jew. Rounding out our three for Thursday is Unbound by Daryl Davis. This is what is termed a gimmickless invisible deck. It's nothing more than just what it sounds like it is. Let me just explain. If you're listening to this podcast, you understand what an invisible deck is, essentially where that a person just thinks of a playing card, and whenever that you fan the deck out, their card they're thinking of is reversed inside the deck. They pull it out and you hand it to them. This is a very old trick using a rough and smooth principle. There are some other ways of handling this, but that's essentially the classic method. This particular method is something that Daryl goes into a lot of detail on this two-hour DVD, not only explaining it, but giving you a lot of other options and some variations and routines, and is very thorough. It is a well-produced DVD, and is something that I think is a really cool idea that he had apparently been talking to Alan Ackerman and had some ideas that he improved on of Alan's ideas on how to do this. But essentially, what you're doing is just this clean, that you have a borrowed deck. You could use your own deck, a brand new deck, and you can have them shuffle it and whatever. The effect is basically where that you're going to be fanning the cards out in one of the presentations, for an example, that you fan the cards, they look at and think of any of the cards from a thoroughly shuffled deck of cards, and then you shuffle them back together, and then ask what the name of their card is, and as you do, you're just kind of going from hand to hand as you're spreading the cards again, and as you do, that you see one single card is actually reversed, and you ask them again their card, they say whatever it is, eight of diamonds, you turn it over, and that's their card. It is just that simple and about that clean. Well, it is that clean. There are some sleights involved, which is why that this is certainly not a beginner trick. This is an intermediate trick, so it's going to involve some things that will take a little bit of work. As he said, whenever he first learned it, that it took him just about 30 minutes to understand and to kind of start working on, but several months before that he really had it perfected, before he felt comfortable and really demonstrating this and showing it to an audience. And I can certainly see to make sure that, you're doing it properly, that you would want to rehearse. And it's something that you can practice on your own, that you don't need to have another volunteer or someone to assist you to work through this. Anyhow, it's a very clever idea. And as I said, part of the beauty of this is that it is an ungimmicked deck. It is a borrowed deck. It's a new deck. It could be yours or theirs, whatever. It could be a full deck or not. Because again, as you're fanning through the cards, you're saying, I want you to look at any card and remember a card you see. So if it's not a full deck, make sure that it is one that's within the deck that you're showing them. But again, there are numerous other ideas and routines and tips and things that he goes into great detail explaining. It is, again, called Unbound by Daryl Davis, and I really recommend this. If you are a card worker and you want to do something that will really blow people away, particularly other magicians, you can do just a regular invisible deck with the lay audience using the traditional method that anybody can do easily. But if you want to do something that kind of steps it up a little bit, that's will certainly fool the guys at the clubs, meetings, magic clubs, this is what you'd probably want to do. Really, really cool. Again, Unbound by Daryl Davis. It's recommended. Well, there you have them, my three for this Thursday. And as I mentioned to begin with, that they are three dissimilar things, but they do have a common theme. And that is that they are using pasteboards or cards. Now, of course, the one I mentioned that was box office is not actually playing cards, but it is a postcard kind of a thing. And it's, again, a card trick, but it is not your typical card trick. So that's what I like about that also, is that it's something that is outside of what normally they think of magicians, a pick a card, any card. Here you're picking a movie, any movie. So that might be a little bit of a variation. But the other one is something that just uses a gimmick card, and another one is something that uses no gimmicks whatsoever, that is your own deck of playing cards. So again, there are three card effects, if you will, for this Thursday. And as I mentioned before, that be sure to support your local brick and mortar magic dealer. And if not, then please support the Magic Word Podcast by going over to the Magic Store. And if you're interested in buying an At the Table lecture, there is a tab there that is specifically for the At the Table lectures. Now, also, I will point out that it does say subscription. That doesn't mean that whenever you purchase one that you're subscribing for a period of time. You are just buying that one for the $9.95 for those two lectures in that particular month. So again, thank you very much for your support in helping the Magic Word Podcast. Well, it's going to be a wrap on another pretty full podcast episode here this week. One other thing, by the way, as far as product reviews, this is really not so much of a review, which is why that I didn't include it in my three for Thursday, but there's something new that I think that you should be aware of, and that is the republication of Tommy Wonder's Books of Wonder. That's a two-volume set that should be on the library of every serious magician. Whoever wants to improve their magic, there are a few books that are better than this. I definitely think it's among the required reading for magicians, and I'm glad to see that it has actually been republished. It was such a good book, and it shouldn't be kept to just the few of us who had the originals. And I do have to say that I'm very thankful that I did buy one of the first editions in 1996 and was fortunate to have Tommy to sign it. I had a couple of opportunities to meet with him and chat and have a drink, and just a great guy and certainly a wonderful magician. I've heard his lecture a time or two, but nevertheless, I'm glad that I've got my original copy, and it's something that is available then now. That you might have seen some emails or perhaps some other way of corresponding to you to let you know that these books are now available. You can go to themagicwordpodcast.com and click on the Magic Store, and there you can see where that you can order your copies of this book as well. Or I should say these books, because it is a combination set. They are not sold individually, they are sold as a set. So again, I'm excited that they are back out there, and I know that there are some people who are listening then right now who like to have good book recommendations. And I know, for an example, someone had told me that upon a recommendation for Strong Magic by Darwin Ortiz, that he went out and purchased that book and has been reading it and learning a lot. And I hope that you who are listening will also take heed of this opportunity, because I don't know how long that these will be available, nor if they will be republished again, and if so, how long it will be before they will see that reprint. But there are a few that are available. So nevertheless, that's Books of Wonder by Tommy Wonder. All right, so I am for sure going to wrap up then now and go on into next week. As soon as I just tell you that I will be in Las Vegas for the Magic Live convention, and so I will not be posting just one podcast next week, but there will be four that will begin on Monday, which will be kind of a recap of what happened on Sunday, whenever that we came in to register and the party and everything else is going on Sunday for the events, which is going to be this coming Sunday, August the 6th. The convention goes from August the 5th through the 8th, but obviously I'm going to be recording conversations each day and then posting them then the following day. So even though the convention runs, of course, Sunday through Wednesday, we'll be posting these updates on Monday through Thursday of this coming week. So be sure to come back to the Magic Word Podcast, or however that you happen to list this, listen to the podcast through your favorite podcatcher, whether it's iTunes or Stitcher, Tuned In, or whatever. So again, just thought I would remind you of that, to come back on a regular basis to kind of hear what was going on each day at the convention. So if you can't attend, this is the next best thing. And so, until next week, stay well, get booked, and create memories on the walls of your audience's minds that cannot be stolen. This is Scotty out.